The Sunday Morning Linux Review, starring Mary Talman, Tony Venus, and Matt Anders as the Beaver.
And this is episode 120.
Mardi Gras.
Woo.
It's party weekend.
Okay. You know?
Yeah.
It is because we have Fat Tuesday.
I go out to the bar almost every Sunday night, so every weekend, party weekend.
Well, I'm actually going to a little Mardi Gras party at Tom's Tavern. And Tom's Tavern is a little Detroit kind of dive bar. It's a very old bar, and it says closed. It's not closed. Trust me, it's not closed at all. But that's what it looks like from the outside. It looks like it's a place that should be condemned, but it's very cool. Look, it gets 5 stars. It's a Detroit treasure. So anyway, I'm going there tonight. The Detroit Pleasure Society, which is a Dixieland jazz band, is going to be playing.
What time do they go on?
9 o'clock.
Maybe I'll come over.
So I may be gone by then, but. But no, just, but yeah, so it's just west of Wyoming Street on 7 Mile in Detroit. So anyway, but that's.
I make no promises.
All right.
You know, they have a Google Plus page?
I think I liked it, actually. There may be one
you
liking
it. How did you do that?
Or Plus One did, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Although so. I reposted something that someone else had posted that was from Facebook, and it said something about likes, and somebody busted my balls. Likes. Google Plus doesn't have likes. So
yeah.
I said back, yeah, well, if you can't associate the two different social networks in your own head, you must be a moron.
All right.
He never replied.
All right.
Okay. So, anyway.
All right, so.
Let's catch up.
It's been 2 weeks.
Catch up time.
I'm still trying to get used to this whole 2 week thing. You know, it's nice having the days off, the extra week off.
Mm-hmm.
But it just seems strange.
Then 1 week before, then it's kind of like it always was, because then you're rushing to get stuff done, right?
So yeah,
it's like
because you,
1 week vacation.
That whole week that you weren't doing anything, you were like, oh, I got a whole week yet. I don't have to put anything together.
Right.
Oh, I got 2 days. Oh, my God, I got to get going. So, well, what did, any interesting open source things you did, Tony?
I was playing more with my Plex server. Pretty cool.
How's that going?
Having fun.
Okay.
I decided I wanted to try to turn my XBMC computer on my TV upstairs into a web browser computer so that I can just go to the Plex website and, or, you know, my server's web page for Plex and play videos off of that. Well, it would have worked perfect.
Except
the computer, it's a single core P4 and it won't play Flash. It is really bad hangs and buffers. And
those servers aren't very good with Flash either.
The
Plex?
Plex?
Yeah, no, that server I'm gonna bring you.
Oh, no. So we were talking about, Matt was going to let me borrow a server to use for my Plex server.
You can have it.
But it renders the videos for you. It re-encodes it and sends it to you, and then you play it on whatever your...
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever your device is.
I
have my phone as my S4. You know, it's a quad core, and it plays them awesome.
Your phone?
Yeah, it's a quad core.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
This thing's faster than my old laptop. Actually, this is probably the fastest device in my house right now.
That's funny. That is funny.
But I have a cable to plug it into my HDMI on the TV, so we're watching movies off of my phone. On the TV instead of that computer. And it actually works pretty good. We watched 3 movies last night.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, the Chromecast that I have, it doesn't broadcast it off the phone. I think the Chromecast eventually, it goes out and gets it and comes in, but the phone kind of creates that connection.
Yeah.
So that they all do
what
it.
It sends a URL to the Chromecast, and the Chromecast then pulls the media from there.
Okay. Because, that's what I used to watch Breaking Bad. And I watched the last episode last night.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, my God. I tell you. But it was a very satisfying ending.
I've never seen an episode.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of them either.
Imagine a horrific train wreck, and you're kind of, well, I mean, for me, I was disgusted, appalled, but I couldn't quit watching.
I have a Netflix account, too. I should probably watch
it. You should watch it, Matt.
I get halfway through a series, though, and I stop. Like Arrow. I started watching Arrow.
Mm-hmm.
Got halfway through it, and I stopped watching it.
Was it because of time, or was it just your lack of interest?
Yeah. I get halfway through everything, and then stop. All the books I start to read, I get halfway through.
Well, I know we're still waiting for the OpenBSD.
It's never coming. Don't give it up. It's never going to happen. I get halfway through and I quit. Mm-hmm.
John's going to be upset.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. Mike.
Mike Lucas?
Mike,
Lucas?
No, but I see John monthly.
Oh,
his
John.
Friend
at
Michigan Network Services?
Yeah. Something like that. He comes every month?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
He unlocks the door.
Oh.
Yeah.
But he sits in and he actually did the presentation on Plex.
Oh, did he?
Last month.
Oh,
yeah.
That's cool.
But anyway, that's, that was fun. I was on that new, podcast, the Linux Lugcast.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was last Friday and, it was interesting. You know, I was thinking they were going to ask us about the show, but it ended up being, and I should have thought about this when they asked, it's a lug kind of show.
About
they
lugs?
Asked me about our lug. I'm like,
I'm shocked.
I know. And
I'm shocked that a lug podcast asked you about your lug.
And I should have put it together. No, but it worked out pretty good. And then I, after the show was done, I sat out here working on a laptop, and I just left Mumble running, and we were chatting for another like 4 hours. I was on until like 1 a.m.
A four-hour podcast?
No.
We're chatting over Mumble.
Oh, okay.
After.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Pay attention, Mary.
I was looking at your script. I'm so sorry.
We look at the script or the explanation? Oh, the script.
I'm looking at the script. I dig bad scripting. I wish I knew how to do it really well.
It's
but
not hard enough. If I can do it, anybody can do it. Trust me.
Copy and paste.
Regex is what I really want. Hey, I can do that.
Regex just says regular expressions.
I know.
They're not hard. What's hard is the globbing.
Connecting things together?
No, the globbing, the making the expansions so that everything expands right.
Okay.
Mm.
All right, so
yeah, what'd you guys do?
Yeah, you had a story, didn't you?
I don't think I have anything I can tell on the air.
Oh, okay.
Just
I thought
because
a server blew up in
your head. Yeah, that involves clients, though. I can't.
Oh, okay. Well, it wasn't your fault.
No, had some badness at work. Some servers acted up a little bit.
Just before you were leaving, that was
yes.
the key piece.
Yeah.
But Matt got it with the skillful guy that he is.
He got it back up.
I was able to leave, and he beat me here.
FSCK to the rescue.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right.
Five times. So anyway, so what else? Is that it? Anything else? Besides working to develop your tool,
I use that all the time. I've had that for a while.
Okay. Right.
Although I did tweak it a little bit. So while I was reading it, I'm like, if I add this, it'll make it a little more readable.
Yeah.
The output a little more readable.
So. Yeah.
Hmm.
Excellent. So, all right.
Mary?
Well, me, last October when I went to Iceland, I took a bunch of pictures and videos and stuff, and so all that stuff has just been sitting on a hard drive doing nothing. So what I started to do now is I started to put together a movie, of course, using all open source tools. So I'm using OpenShot, and I don't know if you guys have ever used OpenShot.
Yeah.
But it's very straightforward and easy to use. And what I really like about it is that you can create title pages. Now, you can create a static title page, or you can create an animated title page.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to use the animated title page feature to create this, you have to have Blender installed because it renders it in Blender, and then it then is a file that is in OpenShot and available to be pulled into your track, your video track.
Yeah.
So what I did is I took one of them is like a globe So I put in the start point, the Latin long for Boston Logan, because that's where I left from. And then the Latin long for Reykjavik, or, well, Keflavik Airport in Iceland, which is outside of Reykjavik. And then I rendered it. So it took a while, of course, because there's like probably 400 frames to render. And so what happens is the globe turns and you see the route of flight going from Boston to Keflavik.
That's
it's very cool. But it uses Blender, because when I first tried to do it, it said, oh, it can't be done. You have to install Blender. And then the other thing, if you have the static title page, and you want to do advanced editing, what OpenShot does is it calls Inkscape. So it opens it in Inkscape, and you can then do whatever you want to do. You then save it in Inkscape. It then is available.
So you have to do the editing in Inkscape, though?
You can do simple editing in OpenShot, but if you want to do advanced stuff.
Because Inkscape is a whole different learning curve for Inkscape.
Oh, it is. I do basic things in Inkscape, but what I really liked about...
Because Inkscape, if I remember correctly, is a wireframe kind of a...
That's Blender.
It's
Inkscape is more of a graphics...
Vector
graphics editor.
Vector-based graphics.
Okay. Yeah. But anyway, so both of those tools, OpenShot connects to them. So it's been kind of fun doing this. And so I'm going to put this little movie together. There's some humor elements, as you might imagine. Actually quite a few.
You going to put it up for download, Mary?
Yes, I'll put it up for viewing. I'm going to stick it out on YouTube, I think.
Well, is it going to be under 10 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because that's that YouTube thing you run into. If you're not registered, you have to prove your like who you are or whatever, and get your account with them, or your videos have to be under 10 minutes.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll make sure. You know, I'll do something. So
and be
it's
careful
available.
Of like if you have any sounds in there that you're not using stuff that's copyrighted, because they will come after you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like that guy.
Take it down.
Did you read about that guy that had the
Lessig?
No, the native bird song. He does foraging.
Mm-hmm.
And he was showing you how to make this salad just from walking around, and there were birds singing while he was out there doing the foraging, and he got nailed. They said that it was copyrighted. He was like, well, copyrighted? It's birds singing in the air while I was...
Wow.
Stop.
He had a hell of a fight to get his audio back on the video.
Well, yeah, I do have some old Icelandic folk songs. We'll see what happens. But anyway, so it's been really fun. And then I'm using GIMP a little bit when needed. But it's been really fun. Oh, and Image Magic, too, because I've taken the photos, because they're really, you know, 1.2, 1.5 megabyte photos, and I've needed to reduce them. And I've just taken them down to like 800 by 600, so it's just a little movie to watch. But yeah, it's just been fun using all these tools and finally getting started with that. So that's one thing I did. Another thing is one of my monitors, I have a dual monitor set up for my financial stuff, and one of the monitors died.
Took a shit.
It did. So I thought, I can't get the other monitor that matches it because it's a Dell that's discontinued. So I ended up getting two monitors. But... it's amazing how cheap they are. It's a 24-inch Samsung monitors. Both of them cost $250.
So they're only $1.25 each.
$250.
Yeah, for both of them, you said.
Yeah, $125.
That's what I just said.
You said $1.25 each. Oh. Hey, I work in the legal industry. They get very particular. Yeah, I was amazed for 24-inch Samsung monitor how inexpensive it was.
Yeah, that's. Really
it was incredible, and it's tax refund time, so I splurge.
Hey, yeah, that's cool.
So yeah, so that's pretty much it for me.
All right.
Well,
I guess it's time for
Matt. What's happening with the kernel?
So, Matt, I think kernel.org is working now.
Yeah! Raise the roof!
All right. Yeah, Matt was a little worried. So, Matt, what is going on in the kernel?
All right. In the kernel, the main line currently is 3.14-RC4, released on 2.24. And the newest stable kernels are 3.13.5, which was released on 2.22, and 3.12.13, which was released on 2/22. 3.10.32, which was released on 2/22. And 3.4.82, which was released on 2/22. And that's all the ones that have been released since the last time we broadcast.
All right.
Excellent.
So what's the difference between a stable and a long-term kernel?
Long-term means they're going to support it for, like, years.
Mm-hmm.
And stable just means it's
months?
Stable.
No, it's the new one out. You can just use that now, and you're safe to use it.
Right.
Okay. Usable enough to not crash quickly.
And then there are EOL kernels, too. Like, if you look on the page, you see the two EOL kernels.
End of line?
That's end of life.
Oh, end of life.
They have been end of life.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no more support for them ongoing?
What are they, 2.6 point what?
No, the one is a 2.6.34.15, and the other is a 3.11.10.
Okay.
So if you're using one of those two kernels, you may want to change to a different kernel.
The other one underneath it is like the one that CentOS and Red Hat are still using. It's the 2.6.32.
Right.
6.1.
Yeah, we had that discussion last episode, I think. Because I didn't realize that they were using such an old, not such an old, but said, and I understand why for servers. I understand.
But the new stuff gets backported to it.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
So,
okay.
If the new stuff will work in it, it gets backported to it.
Okay. And servers got to be stable.
That's right.
You go with tried and true methods, so. All right. Well, that's good. Good to catch up on what's going on in the kernel.
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
My list starts on the 17th. I don't know, did you see anything? Did I miss anything in that one day that's not on the list?
Mm-hmm. Yes, you did.
Oh, no. Because I have Bridge Blink Linux.
On. Blink on Linux came out after our last broadcast. So, anyway, it's an Indonesian distribution. And they have got, I actually went out to their website to take a look at what they've got going out there. And they have got, they're based on Ubuntu, first of all. But what they've done is they've taken and created, it's a left-sided menu system, but it's not really a Unity system. You know how Unity has the icons. They've got more, more like little, terms and things where you can click on it and then the menu will shoot out and you've got your options there. So I thought that was kind of a nice way to approach it.
Yeah, so it's more like a menu system instead of, and not like a dock.
Yep.
That's cool.
So, and they've taken, they've also, and one interesting thing about this project is they kind of, it appeared to me that they called themselves the Ubuntu Project. Now, I don't know what their connection is with the official Ubuntu project or not, but they certainly, you know, as far as an Indonesian distro, these guys appear to be the one. So, I mean, there's probably some officialness in there someplace. But I found that kind of interesting that they referred to themselves in that way. So,
well, if they aren't associated, Canonical is going to send them a cease and desist pretty quick.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. Well, all right, and then on the 17th, we have Bridge Linux 2014.02, which is Arch-based with GNOME, KDE, LXDE, and XFCE for desktop.
Yeah, you said they're Arch-based, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, unlike Arch, with Bridge, they take it one little step further, so when you boot, you're going to boot directly into one of the available graphical desktops. So.
All right.
Yeah. And you know, they've got a set of common applications that come already installed with it. And I don't know, does Arch do that, or do you basically get to choose what you want? And it has just a kind of a basic core set.
I remember installing Arch before, but I can't remember.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever really reviewed Arch. I did Slackware.
I remember it being
had a pleasant experience.
Almost from scratch kind of build up.
Yeah. So Bridge kind of takes some of that away. And helps the user out.
All right.
So.
All right, on the 18th, we have UCS, which is the Univention Corporate Server 3.2-1, which is a Debian-based server. with web-based management for central administration of servers. And I remember looking at this before. They used to have a different name. Now I can't remember what the old name was.
Yeah, I think they're German. They're based out of Germany. They're very, seem to be a very well put together organization.
Yeah, I want to say they did a lot of work with getting Active Directory working with Samba and mm-hmm. really well and everything.
Yeah, it makes sense.
All right, the next up we have RoboLinux 7.4.1. That was on the 20th. And it's a debian base also, with a tightly integrated VirtualBox virtualization software for running other operating systems and an application window as guest.
That's right, and I'm not going to say anything more about it because I said a ton last episode when I reviewed it. But no, it's it had those two. Those two kind of unique aspects to it, one of which was that virtualization where if you get infected with a virus, it's pretty much contained in that window. But what they've done is they've just made it easy for new users to virtualize.
Mm-hmm.
I think new users appreciate that even though they may not realize what's going on.
Very cool.
So.
All right. And on the 20th, we have the NST or the Network Security Toolkit. 20-5663, which they're a Fedora-based live DVD mm-hmm. with extensive collection of open-source network security tools.
Yeah, and in addition to having an extensive collection of those, they've got some nice articles that they've put together for anyone that is interested in getting NST up and running. They're on their wiki site. For example, if you're upgrading from a previous version, they've got one for that. They've got one if you're brand new, just getting started, hard disk installation, copying ISO images to USB. So they've really kind of gone that extra distance to create some nice documentation for people so they can get started with it.
All right.
So check it out. Check it out.
Yeah. On the 21st, we have Gparted Live. And we've talked about that a lot. It's great for disk utilities. On the 22nd, we have Tanglu at 1.0. This is a new Linux distro based on Debian's testing branch.
Yeah, and they go out of their way. Oh, are you done? I'm sorry.
Yeah, go
I'm
ahead.
Talking over you. They go out of their way on their website to say, you know, we diverge from Debian at some point, so you'll find differences. And they say it's not Debian, but they do try to work together whenever possible. So, they go on to mention that many of the changes that they've done were for desktop use cases, simplification, removal of some packages from the default Debian installation that they didn't think were required. Their first release, they support the KDE desktop, and then they're also offering a preview of GNOME. And by the way, too, for experienced users, on their website, they mention that they offer a Docker container to test Tanglu Core. So just that, you know, the basic core that you can do that through one of those containers. So.
All right, very
I mean, this
cool.
has been around because I think it was announced about a year ago. And is this their version 1? Is that
right?
Yeah,
1.0.
Yeah, so took them a year to get to from that initial announcement to V1. So congratulations to them.
Yeah, congrats. All right, on the 23rd, we have Manjaro Linux 0.8.9, which is an Arch-based also with KDE or XFCE as a desktop. As well as lightweight OpenBox. And I've heard a lot of good things about their XFCE setup for it.
Have you?
If you're looking for a lightweight distro, then
Manjaro
is a good one.
Yeah, a little flavor of Arch. And they, of course, have a KDE edition. But this particular release, they've installed, I think it says so on that DistroWatch page, and I went ahead and installed it on my phone, but they've got something called KDE Connect. So now you can share all your files and control your desktop entirely over your phone. Mm-hmm. I installed it yesterday, and I have not had time to try it, but I think over the next couple of weeks, I should have some time. I'll carve out some time to test it and then let folks know what it's like.
Does it use all Bluetooth? Right.
I think so, but I'm going to find out. I'm going to find out, and I'll let you know for sure.
Because I turn Bluetooth off on my phone.
I do, too. Unless I'm using it for something specific, I've got a little keyboard, and so I do turn it on for that. But otherwise, I turn it off. Because I think I don't know if you saw it, and I can't remember whose Google Plus stream they had this video of Safas, who did this drive, kind of a little
the bicycle war drive
through San Francisco. Oh my God!
They found so many open devices; it was incredible.
Really?
Oh yeah!
Wow!
The data they collected.
I'm sure mostly iPhones.
all iPhones.
That's right.
But anyway, yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting. So, but just seeing that Manjaro has this, I just thought, I'm going to put this on and give it a try. But another thing that this particular release of Manjaro, they have something called, and I had to laugh when I read the name, it's called Turbulence. Now, when is turbulence ever good?
I don't know. It usually makes people sick.
Exactly. So I'm not sure if something got lost in the translation. It started off in another language or something, but it's called Turbulence. And this is what this is a post-install tool that will help you customize your desktop. It kind of reminds me of that one that I think, I don't know if it was Parduk or Parsix has, that Chakra kind of adopted. So once you install, then you can set your wallpaper, and you basically do it from kind of a little dashboard. So it's really nice. You don't have to go here, go there. It's all set up for you. But yeah, it handles that. Let's see here. Hang on a second. And it's written for KDE and OpenBox. So if you're using either one of those desktop environments in Manjaro, you'll be able to make use of it. So wallpaper, what home folder you're using, desktop specific features, Kwin theme, whatever a tint 2 panel position is. I have no idea what that is, but hey, if you know, you can change it
exactly.
In Turbulence. So that, you know, that really caught my eye when I was taking a look at what Manjaro had available. So
all right. And on the 25th, we have Emmubuntus.
Oh, yeah. Emmubuntus.
Yeah, that's it.
That
Emmubuntus. 12.04.4-1.07.
Yeah, there weren't a lot of, I don't think there were a lot of huge updates on that thing, but.
By the way, I said it like that just because I knew I was going to say it wrong, so I thought I'd make it.
That's
funny.
Right. So I knew it was a punt to me, and I ran with it.
That's right.
So Tony, thanks for the.
They're Zubuntu based. Did you just say that or?
No.
No. Okay.
I did not say that. I said there weren't a lot of. I don't think there were a lot of things included in there. I don't think.
Yeah. Well,
I don't have much. I didn't have much to say about it.
Their ideas for it's designed for humanitarian organizations.
Yep.
All right, next up we have, also on the 25th, is AV Linux 6.0.3, which is Debian-based, and they do audio-visual things, just like the name, AV Linux.
Really?
That's
shocker.
Right.
Shocker that.
Yeah, and I chuckled when I went out to take a look at the release notes and all that, and I had to chuckle because, you know, ATI is not really beloved in the Linux community. At least that's been my impression, and I try to avoid computers that have ATI graphics cards.
They're more beloved than NVIDIA.
In the last 4 or 5 years, it's all kind of swapped.
Yeah.
Because NVIDIA has really good support for Linux if you want to run their binary drivers.
Their binary blob.
Uh-huh.
But then at some point they decide to no longer support it.
Right.
Well, it's fine.
When,
it works just
AMD,
great in PCBSD.
When AMD bought out ATI,
mm-hmm.
Then they started opening up and writing open source drivers.
For their stuff.
For stuff.
Yeah.
So,
well,
so any of the new ATI cards are supported pretty well.
Because AV Linux does their best to kind of make everything work together, and they said here, it kind of cracked me up, it says, please remember third-party proprietary video drivers are provided with the best of intentions for convenience, but they are third-party, and therefore many of the problems they present, i.e., known broken ATI drivers, come on, really, AMD, that's what you have to offer? I mean, he puts that right in there, right, in the note, are beyond my control. So they pretty much say, hey, this, it's sort of a crapshoot, and if it doesn't work, they can't really fix it. It's up to somebody else to, you know, ATI or AMD or somebody to do that. So, yeah. So,
all right.
But he does go on to note that the new default 3.10.27 low latency kernel will work with the NVIDIA proprietary drivers, if you're so inclined to use proprietary drivers.
Right.
You know, some people are purists and don't want to, and I completely understand that.
Sure. All right, going on, we have TinyCore Linux 5.2 PiCore. So this is their Raspberry Pi single board computer kind of distro, spin for TinyCore.
Yeah, and I think we talked about them a few weeks ago, I think, when I discovered that they're not really a traditional distribution exactly. They're more of a, and the website goes on to say this too, they're more of a toolkit to create your own custom system. Because you remember when I tried to review them?
Oh, right.
I didn't completely realize it. I mean, I will profess ignorance on that front. But it was, the core was good, but I remember saying that there wasn't a lot of stuff with it, and that's because just that.
A lot of places use it to, like, that's where they start their embedded systems from and things like that.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it's a small footprint, and a set of basic apps making it ideal for custom systems. And then, of course, they've got this one that's set up to really match the Raspberry Pi, so it's running entirely in RAM. So.
All right.
There you go. I think it's 21 and a half megs in size, I think. Is that what it says on the site, DistroWatch?
You know, I saw a nifty project the other day that had to do with the Raspberry Pi.
Mm-hmm. Is that camera?
The touchscreen camera from the Raspberry Pi.
I've seen that, too. That is pretty cool.
Yeah. The part I like the best is that it included Legos and rubber bands as far as the container, the case for the camera.
I did notice that the touchscreen was held on
John
Miller
had it. Yeah. That cracked me up when I saw that. I thought, man, you know, you got it. Hey, necessity is the mother of invention.
That's right.
So.
All right. And the last up on the list is SME Server 8.1. Which is a CentOS-based server.
For this release, these guys had four betas and just one release candidate, so I think they felt pretty confident. And what I enjoyed about their site and how they track things is that they're very thorough in identifying the changes between each beta. I mean, it's just listed there, so you can just scan right down the page and just see how things progressed. And so when they had their one and only release candidate, there was really nothing, everything was really pretty good. I mean, and even between the last beta and the first and only release candidate, there weren't a lot of changes, so they felt pretty confident. One other thing, too, is you know, this is a small office, kind of a small office server project, and they, as all of them do, and I'm going to make this quick plug, they make the case for donations. And so what they've done is they put a donation button right next to the login. So, and, you know, folks, if you're using open source software, just throw a few bucks their way. It doesn't have to be a lot, you know, $2 or $3 if you can't afford it, but it's really important because these people work very hard for this stuff. So
I agree.
All right,
and then we're on to the top five of the week.
Yeah.
Hold on.
The distro of the week, according to DistroWatch, calculated by website hits per day.
All right. And at number five, we have Manjaro with 1502.
And trending up.
Number four is Tinglu with 1641.
And trending up.
Number three is Debian with 1839.
And trending down.
And in the number two spot is Ubuntu with 2147.
And trending up.
And in the number one spot is Mint.
Gotta love that minty goodness.
With 4031.
And trending down.
And coming in at number 34, we have Kubuntu at 427 and trending up. And PCBSD is rocking in there at 49, and it's standing solid at 304.
That's 304. Right. You're in the top 50%.
That's right.
Where did you say?
PCBSD?
Yeah.
Number 49.
Oh, 49.
Yeah. So.
All right.
Get my little plugs in there.
I'm ready for some more coffee, so I think we should take a quick coffee break.
We're going to take a quick coffee break.
Sounds like a great idea to me.
All right. Do we have enough?
We should play a little bit of music or something.
Like
Klaatu?
Yeah, Klaatu does with it. That's all right, I'll drink it. Or no, don't.
Oh, did you guys see what Chatter suggested?
Yes.
Go through different window managers and desktop environments.
That sounds good.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that certainly.
Matt's going to have a hint of hazelnut in there.
Oh, is he?
So I dumped it out. So, no, he doesn't want it. I accidentally put it in there.
Oh, I see. I thought you said you're going to have it.
No, I would much rather.
Now you're going to have, as in you desire it. It's by accident.
Take a top off?
Yeah, I do. Just top it right off. I think that should empty it out. Great.
All right.
I'll be jazzed for my meeting and jazzed for the Dixieland jazz. All right. Oh, where's
the regular creamer?
Oh yeah, I'm sorry, Tony. All right.
So this last week was my birthday. We do birthday week.
You know, I saw that. I meant to say something to you.
It's all right.
Tony, I'm so sorry.
No problem, but last night I...
Is it like a major milestone birthday? You turned 30?
34.
Oh, okay.
I just thought of something, Tony.
What's that?
Are we still on break here? Or are we back?
Whatever.
Okay. How about if I just give you that server for those, rather than $30? Or no?
No.
Okay. You can have the server anyway.
that was part of my consideration. Although, if I were to spend money for a computer, it wouldn't be a dual single core server. So.
But it's only $30.
I know, but for $40, I can get a dual core small form factor PC that takes half the power and.
Yeah.
All right, so are we going back on?
Yeah. All right, so next up is our news, right? Because this week we're doing a tool tip, and Mary's not doing a review.
No.
So we're going to go into
next
news, then tool tip.
Next session.
It's time for the tech news of the week.
News this week.
Mary.
Oh, yeah, I do have some news. I don't know if you saw this because I posted it in my Google Plus stream this morning, but the Tor project is going to develop a anonymized text messaging system so that you can anonymously send text messages.
Hmm.
So then, of course...
Then how do you get replies?
I think you just send them out blindly.
No,
you must establish some kind of a key.
Is it something related to BitMessage?
I don't know.
Because there's a way to do that with BitMessage. And,
is there?
You don't have a username. It goes through the BitTorrent network,
mm-hmm.
like peer-to-peer network.
Okay.
And you have this like long string of characters, which is your to and from... you know, address. And, so it's anonymized because, you know, there's no correlation between your name and that.
So you get a new string each time?
No, you create one when you first use the program or set up program. And then you use that from then on. You can create your own address book to connect to others, but there's no central login or anything for it.
This is just announced, too. According to the news article that I saw, and I'll post a link to it, I guess the Tor developers they're very interested in this, and so they've got they've been meeting, and the author of this article surmised that it probably won't be long before the new service rolls out. So I guess we'll see We'll see what happens. So, all right.
Yeah.
So there's that one.
Interesting.
And there is another one. I saw, I think it was yesterday, as a matter of fact, that he's a well-known attorney, too. His name is, I think it's, is it Lawrence Lessig? Does that name ring a bell?
Yes.
He won, and this was on NPR. So, man, I'm surprised you didn't see this.
I may have, and it has slipped my mind.
Yes, what happened is that it basically is a win for fair use after record label and copyright lawyers settle. Now, what's sort of funny about the word settle is you kind of think that, you know, both parties, you know, that there was sort of a compromise type of thing. And perhaps there was, but...
But if they settled instead of finishing it through the court case, it doesn't set precedent.
Yeah, you mentioned that to me yesterday on that other video thing that we had in Google Plus. But apparently, in a statement, Liberation Music, and this is an Australian record company, record label, Liberation Music admitted Lessig's use of the song, and he had used the song for, it was his lecture in YouTube, and I guess he had a bit of this song, and it was, and, you know, as we talked about earlier, YouTube uses the technology to scan videos to find copyrighted songs. And I knew that they did this, and I thought, well, why are some of these songs still out there? But apparently some artists have agreed to get a little cut of the royalty.
Right, they throw advertising on.
Yes, exactly. Which makes a lot of sense. I mean, if I get to listen to a song I haven't heard for 30 years, and, oh, I've got a 15-second ad in front of it, that's fine. I understand through that ad, I'm able to listen to the song.
Yeah, but you can get it with...
So then I go out and buy the car.
No, you can get it with YouTube Downloader, though. Strips the commercial out of it, strips the video out of it.
Well,
it's just the audio file.
Yeah, I know. I'm aware of that. but I'm saying when you first find it, though, I think you just, come on. All right. But anyway, let me get back to this. Let me get back to this little news item. So, but yeah, he had used this song as an example of fair use. So that he got sued because, and what's so ironic is the lecture was about fair use. He used the song as an example, and then he got sued for it. So,
nice.
So in the statement, they admitted that his use of the song was protected by fair use. And then they also are going to be paying him for the harm that they caused. But the amount is confidential under the terms of the agreement. But it will be dedicated to the supporting work by the Electronic Frontier Foundation, of which I'm a member. And I just thought it was kind of funny because in winning this tussle, this is what the article says, Lessig was also able to score a larger victory for his cause. Liberation Music agreed to adopt new policies around issuing takedown notices. And the label has promised to work with Lessig to improve its YouTube and copyright policies to make sure this doesn't happen again. So it sounds to me like settling means Lessig had his, you know, they
right.
had a boot on their throat.
And they're
basically.
Never going to do it again.
They're
it
never,
doesn't
yeah.
set any precedent at all in the courts.
No.
For future litigation amongst other participants.
But it would seem to me that you're right. You appear to be right. I've sometimes let you get away with being right when
no,
you were, but
if it
no,
doesn't go to the end, it doesn't, yeah. doesn't set precedent.
But
at
I
all.
Think that if you get a number of these, just the sheer weight or the sheer volume of these kinds of decisions it, would somehow.
It's not a decision, it's a settlement. That's why it doesn't
okay.
set precedent.
All right.
Because the two parties agreed. There was no ultimate decision by a judge.
But I like the fact that clearly from this settlement, it was clearly...
They knew they were going to lose.
They knew they were going to lose.
They didn't want to set the precedent, so they settled.
Okay. I thought it was pretty good, though. So thank you, Counselor Lessig, for your hard work there. So anyway, but those are the two news items that I had. There was one other thing that I saw, and I don't have the link to it right yet because I just saw it this morning and I didn't have time to get it prepped. There was a note. Somebody had posted this article about Microsoft secretly has forked Chrome OS, and they're creating Bing OS. And I'm reading this thing, and
it's
I'm thinking...
not forked Chrome, though.
Well, they forked Android.
No, I think they're...
No, it's not real. as I'm reading this thing, I'm thinking, exactly, this happened this morning. As I said, I didn't have time to really prep this to present it properly, so I'm presenting it improperly. But there was this, it was in Google Plus, and I clicked on it, I went to the article, and I'm thinking, oh my God, I can't believe they're doing this. And then it said that this revelation had caused Microsoft stock to bump up to $768. And I'm thinking, no way, this is a fake. And at the very end, it was. So it was just kind of a satire.
The one I saw, I didn't want to say about it because I didn't get a chance to actually read it and know what was going on with it. They said that they were going to give Windows 8 away for free to manufacturers mm-hmm. and incorporate the Microsoft tools to make a competitor to Chromebook.
Really?
Yes.
Oh. Well, are you going to be checking into that?
I don't have time? I don't know.
Okay.
I think it might have been a fake similar to your article.
Yeah.
That's why I wasn't going to bring it up.
Yeah. So, but what my comment then was, you know, the Microsoft stock price was $768, you know, that was the number. So my comment was that in Bitcoin because it was so high.
Right, right.
Because they're normally in like the 20s where they've sort of languished for years. And speaking of Microsoft, this is another news thing that I think came out after our last episode. Did you see that Ford is dropping Sync?
Yes, Sync
is based on Microsoft technology.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
because
Windows
of the CE. Because of the user complaints, and they're going with BlackBerry.
Yep.
Which now
because BlackBerry's gone Android.
Have they
on their new devices?
Okay.
Are they really?
Because BlackBerry, back in the day, they were very solid mobile platform for corporate users. And I have not really followed them in recent
I can see this
years.
Being a good thing because they've really been losing a lot.
They've been losing a lot of market share, but this will be good for them to get other revenue outside the phone business. So.
Right, and it kind of makes a niche market where not very many companies are in it right now.
Right.
So if they can make a name there.
I used to love my BlackBerry. When I had my BlackBerry.
I remember you talking about that. But, you know, one thing that they could do is they could create some really cool little apps, BlackBerry-type apps for that Android system, which then would create a synergy if somebody got a phone, BlackBerry phone Android, so that between the two they'd be able to maybe do some really cool things.
And don't take it as gospel. That's what I believe. From something I read several months ago. I may be wrong about BlackBerry going Android.
Oh, okay.
But I thought I read something to that effect before I start the freaking gigantic rumor mill.
The disclaimer comes, yeah.
I get tons of email going, what are you talking about? You know,
yeah, see, I just bought that because, you know, I'm glad
I want to say I heard something about that too, but I can't place any specifics.
It was a couple of months ago I read it somewhere. I can't remember.
Okay. Well, but those are my news items.
All right. I found something. It's more security oriented, but we can just throw it in with the news. And it's not, it's kind of like make fun of Microsoft instead of. but what they're saying is that, you know how everybody wants to run as an administrator in Windows, especially like Windows XP, that's all I did. And with Linux, the whole idea is you don't run as root or the administrative account. You always have your own limited account. And if you need to do anything administrative to the computer, then you either do sudo or log in as root.
Root or something, yeah.
Exactly. And so what they're saying is that their studies mm-hmm. saying that out of all the patches that Microsoft has put out in the last year, 92% of them would have been mitigated if you're running as a limited account, not as administrator.
Oh, yeah.
92%.
It's been that way forever.
Yeah.
All these attacks only work because everyone runs as root always in Windows.
And you know what I thought was really interesting? 100%.
Local admin. Is local admin like root?
Yeah, it is root.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what Windows calls root.
Yeah. But 100% of the vulnerabilities in Internet Explorer would have been mitigated by running as a limited account.
I mean, when would you need to run as root when you're in a browser?
You don't.
You don't
you
ever
shouldn't.
Need to.
You should, yeah,
but,
should
but,
never.
But people just want to do it because it's easier.
Yeah,
because
they don't want to do something separate to be able to install a program.
They want to just be able to click on it and install it. Well, if you can click on it and install it, the attacker can click on it and install it. That's
exactly. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really interesting, and I got a link to a PDF from AVECTO, which goes through and talks about that same thing.
Oh, Avecto?
Avecto, yeah. So I thought that was an interesting thing.
Yeah, that is interesting, Tony. Thanks for sharing that.
And the other thing that Matt and I were talking a little bit about it before the start of the show, there was a big attack a couple weeks ago about NTP attack.
Oh, yeah.
Or using NTP servers.
Well, there was a big one just this week. It took down all of level 3. That's what they're called.
Wow. Now, and what they do is, I heard about it and I couldn't look it up, because I was listening, as I was at work, I was listening to podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to Security Now and he was talking about it. It's actually a really good explanation. So if you get a chance, go back a couple episodes to Security Now. But what they do is because it's using UDP, you can spoof your IP address and there's no handshake saying, yes, you send it back to me or verify that we're communicating. You just say you send it off, and then whenever they reply to whatever address you put in the packet. So what they did is the targeted server spoofed that address, and then they distributed this attack across 4,000 NTP servers. And there's a specific command that you request reply with all the users
the
or
last
all
600.
The yeah the for last the last
600 time requests.
That's right. So it ends up sending out every reply is like a 5 meg reply, and when you combine that with thousands of servers and thousands of requests,
things get
coming
slow.
Back to one address. They would you say it was like a 45 gig reply?
No, 400. Gigabits per second is what it worked out to.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It took Cloudflare down.
Wow.
Because the website that was being attacked was behind Cloudflare, and it took Cloudflare down.
Jeez.
So that then the website was taken down also, because at that point, then Cloudflare just passed the traffic through.
Wow. So I thought that was interesting. And yeah. I'll try to look up some info on that, but I couldn't find any previously.
Okay.
Tools from the toolbox.
The toolbox.
So tell us
about it,
man.
Yeah, what's in that toolbox?
The toolbox,
Matt,
is going to be a custom script. And now I'm not going to, for any of you out there in IRC land, I'm not going to be able to see my IRC window once I bring these up. So you really should, if you're going to listen to this, you should download the script, which we have on the website. And Tony's put the links in the IRC. Those links will also be on the website. And I believe they're short enough, if I can read them now.
Yeah.
They obviously start with smlr.us. And then the script itself is at /120/crash-info-g.sh. And then my notes are /120/explain-crash-info-g. So, hopefully that made sense to you all. If not, too bad.
If not, you'll be in the same place I am.
So, first of all, we start off with the shebang bin bash, okay?
That's wonderful.
Shebang, yeah.
It just shebang bin bash. I mean, it just sounded like a song thing. Okay. The way you said it. I'm so sorry, Matt. I didn't
interrupt
you.
No, that's all right. That's all right.
And that's okay. How all bash scripts start.
That's how all scripts start, is with the shebang.
Hashbang.
Yeah. I call it shebang. It's also known as a shabang and
shebang.
A bunch of shebang. Other things.
Right.
But
shebang.
It's called the shebang, and normally the hash sign, which is the pound sign, is used to denote a comment. But in this instance, along with the bang symbol, which is an exclamation point, means use this interpreter to run what follows. So on the first line of the script, the the hash and the bang mean this is the interpreter that you're supposed to use to run everything that follows. So in this case, I use bin bash. But you could use user bin awk. You could, you know, whatever.
Right.
Whatever interpreter you want to run the script.
Or other shells. You could use K shell or just SH.
Right.
TSCH.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever.
Corn.
That's where it would go. If you wrote. Mary's just busting at the guts here to make fun of me. But if you wrote the script for a specific shell like ZSH or Corn or something like that, then yes, that's where that information would go.
So right.
The right interpreter to use.
Okay. As a quick little off, I did that. I wrote it in K shell. And I put K-shell right in there. And then later, I no longer use it. I just stuck with bash. I tried to run my script and it wouldn't run. Because K-shell wasn't installed. So I had to go in and edit my script.
Was it obvious? How was the error handling? Was it clear to you that was what was wrong? Or did it just give you some nondescript error?
It took me running it like 3 times with that error to realize, a minute. Why is it asking for K-shell?
Okay. That's funny.
Anyway.
Yep. And then the very first thing I do in the script after I tell it what interpreter to use is set a variable for the current date and time to then tag files and directories with that I'm going to make throughout the script. And one of our listeners, Chatter in the IRC, he got the script early and gave me a suggestion on improving that, so I might actually take him up on his suggestion. I did it the way I did it there with now equals dollar and then in parentheses date plus %y %m %d so that I could add the dash at the front of the y so that it would put a dash in between the name of the name of whatever and the date. But what he did was he moved the dash into the file name and used dash L.
Oh.
Or, I mean, not dash L. I think it's dash uppercase I is what he used.
Okay, so then you don't have to go with all that.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I may incorporate that, Chatter. Thank you very much. It just didn't occur to me to do it that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and doesn't I use AM/PM instead of 24-hour time?
No, it's still... it doesn't give you the... I forget what it was now, but whatever he suggested gives you the same format I have with year, month, and day only.
Are you talking about I? I've seen I in scripts, and I've seen I in mathematics. Now, the I in a script, what does that represent? Is it something predetermined, or do you just assign it?
We'll get to what I'm going to use I for later.
Okay.
It's related to the date command.
Is it?
That is, yeah.
Okay.
That dash I up there is it's a flag for date.
Okay.
And again, I don't remember which flag it was right now.
Are we slowing you down, Matt?
A little bit. But that's okay. This makes for...
Okay.
This is goodness. I was worried that I was just going to wind up talking for like 20 minutes. Okay. So now that we have the variable now set, which we're going to use later several times, we'll make the directories that we may or may not use. The one directory will always be used, and the two other directories may or may not be used depending on how you run the script. Because I do some S tracing and I have that commented out right now because that's real intensive and it builds file sizes real quickly. You have to pay attention because the S traces won't end when the script ends.
Oh.
You have to manually stop the S traces.
You can't script them to stop?
I probably could, but this is called a crash script because mostly I run this on servers that I know are going to crash.
Okay.
So the crash then kills the S traces. The server crashes. The server does.
Gotcha.
But if it doesn't go down, if the server doesn't go down, if you're not using it in a crash type situation, you have to remember to manually stop these S traces or they will do damage to you eventually.
When you're saying server, you mean like the physical machine or like a whole operating system, or are you talking about a service like HTTP?
No, I'm talking about the server.
Okay.
Because you'll wind up filling up a file system.
Yeah. No, I mean, I meant crashing. You're talking about
the whole server will go down.
Yeah.
Whole server, yeah. So the directories we're going to make, and I use the dash P flag because if the directory already exists, we don't want make there to throw errors. We just want it to move on. So I use the dash P flag.
Is that what that is? Okay.
Yes.
Use for? Okay.
So we made crash info. Actually, that's wrong. It should be crash info now. I have to correct my script. It should make crash info now, crash info now M traces, and crash info now P traces.
Mm.
So that the M traces is where the MySQLS traces are going to go, and P traces is where the PHP FPM S traces are going to go.
Oh, okay. So that's kind of nice. You sort of start to organize it.
Well, yeah, because you've got to...
Otherwise, this one big bucket?
It collects a bunch of information that's meant to be read and understood by a human being.
Okay.
So I do a lot of formatting throughout it, too, and pretty printing and things like that.
That's very
cool.
That's
what it's called when you use printf, Mary. It's called pretty printing.
I was thinking, oh, my God, I just can't believe Matt said that, but okay, sure it is. Keep going.
All right. So... The first one, if you're looking at the script, you'll see that the first bunch of stuff's all grayed out because it's all commented out. First, I want to talk about how I use comments. If it's a double hash in front of it, it's an actual comment and not meant to be ever uncommented. Okay? But if it's only a single hash, that line can be uncommented and used in the script.
Mm.
Okay?
It's a good idea.
Yeah, it's... It's my...
Is that standard? Or
no,
is that,
it's my work.
Really? It sounds like a best practices.
It's a best practice of mine.
Oh, I think it makes a lot of sense.
So. You should TM Ender's best practices.
Yeah. Well, I just do that so that I, when I look at it quick, I can tell what's meant to be uncommon and what's not meant to be uncommon.
Sure. So. Yeah, that makes sense.
So, anyway, if you're going to run this first part, you would have to uncomment the stuff. So, it's going to... And this first one, S traces... all of the currently running PHP FPM processes.
Mm-hmm.
And what PHP FPM is a fast CGI process manager. What it does is allows you to manage fast CGI processes a lot better. Let's do a lot more fine-grained management with how many number of processes are allowed to start up and run and how much... memory they can use and things like that. It just gives you more fine-grained control. So
all right.
It's a beautiful tool. And so I do that with a little for loop, for x in, and then this is going to make the variable, psaux, and then I grep out for php master fpm, php fpm master, and the reason that the first p in php is in the square braces is because when you do that, grep will not return your search in the results.
Right.
Oh.
When you do it in braces.
Right, because I don't want the process of my search...
The greps process.
Right, right. Going to the rest of the script, I just want the actual PHP FPM processes.
Mm-hmm.
So when
then
you
if nothing comes back, then you know nothing's actually running related to that.
But if it's not running, you wouldn't uncomment that line.
No, when you do the grep.
I know. I was making it.
He was being funny. Right. But no one got it.
I know.
All right.
The story of my life. Anyway, and then I pipe that to awk, and I do a print too. Now, I realize you could probably use cut here. I learned awk before I learned about cut, so I use awk all the time.
Well, what does that do? Just print the second field?
Second column?
Column, which is a field.
Right, which is going to be the process ID.
Trying to contribute to the conversation.
So what I'm doing is I'm making X is going to equal this list of process IDs. Okay? So then I do strace-fp, which stands for, the F stands for if it forks, follow it. And the P stands for I'm going to give it a PID to that strace.
Okay.
So it's -fp $X, which is my list of PIDs. And then I redirect that information that comes out into crash info now ptraces $X. And then I name each S trace with the PID of the S trace.
Ah.
So and done.
So I can see how that can build a lot of files quickly because it'll take every process and run a ptrace on it and then dump that into a file.
Right.
Yeah.
With PHP FPM, that can get pretty big. And it can, by doing a lot of different files. But the next one, the MySQL one, is actually going to create a gigantic file, one big gigantic file. Because all of the sub, MySQL just runs as a master process, the way we do it anyway. And then all of the different queries and things people are doing wind up being forked sub-processes. Okay, so that was the PHP S-traces that we're going to do. And now the MySQL ones. Actually, there's two PHP. There's supposed to be one for a shared machine and one for a dedicated machine. But in my notes, I don't have the one for the shared machine. I only have the one for the dedicated machine. So, read the script. It's in the script.
That's all right. Well, that's cool.
It's not
okay.
In the notes. All right. And then for the MySQL, you would do, it does 4x in pid of MySQL. Because I can just use PID of to get the PID there. But for some reason, it doesn't work with... I don't know why I use PS and then grepped it out. I had a reason, but I don't remember what it is.
All right.
But with MySQL, I use PID of, grab the PID of MySQL. If there are multiple, it grabs the multiple PIDs. And then I do the S-trace on FP the same way, and then done.
Mm-hmm.
And for these next several, you actually have to do some editing on it. It won't work unless you edit in some information.
Some custom, you know, related to your system.
Right, because these are actually going to grab information from MySQL itself.
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to explain this stuff I do one time here at the beginning. At the beginning of each line, you'll notice that it says echo E and then a bunch of asterisks and then a slash N and then dollar date. And then a slash N and a bunch more asterisks. And what that is doing is putting a separator at the top. Because it's going to grab a lot of this information multiple times. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want the information all running together. I need it to be human readable.
Okay.
Right.
So I've got to put a separator in. So I do that with, and I put the current, I just use dollar date because that'll give me the date like down to the second when that command was run. And that'll also be a separator. So this one was run at 950952 and 33 seconds, and so on. And then the next one will be at 10:50, you know, whatever. However, whatever you had your iteration set at.
Okay.
And then what it does is it's MySQL-U, and then you have to enter your username. You have to replace where I have user with the username. Hopefully of the master user. If you, for some reason you can't use the master user, then you're going to have to also add the actual database you want to get in there. But hopefully you'll be able to use them. If you can't use the master user, you probably shouldn't be running this anyway. So,
okay.
And then -P for password for the master user, and then -E show global status /G. And what that's going to do is going to give you back the global status of MySQL. Now, that one is outside the loop, so that's only going to get run once when the script starts. And this next one is also outside the loop and is only going to get run once. And it's going to be the same MySQL-U user-P password. And then it's going to be show global variables. So that one's going to print all the global variables in MySQL.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And then these next two are going to be run on every iteration through the for loop in the script. And it is the MySQL, blah, blah, show full process list. So it shows you every process that MySQL is running, the full list. So, like, okay, if you've got queries backing up, because, like, sometimes, a lot of times what crashes a database server is you'll get a long-running query that'll back up all the other queries, and you'll get hundreds of queries stacking up behind it. This will show you that.
Hmm. Oh, okay. That's okay. Very helpful.
And then the next one is going to be the show engine InnoDB status. InnoDB is the default engine used by MySQL. At least I think it's the default engine. It's the one we use. But it's going to show you its status. So, and it'll show you like the number of sleeping queries, the number of selects, and just everything that's going on with the engine at the time on every iteration. So those two will be inside the for loop. Now let's talk about the for part of the loop. That's what I have there next. And it's this is where we set the variable I in our for loop. And it says that I is going to equal 0, and that every time you come back around, your current value is less than 5, because this isn't a script I'm going to run. This is my test one.
Sure.
And I don't want to wait longer than a minute.
Okay.
Right. So, and your value is less than 5, add 1 and move on. And then when it comes around and the value is not less than 5 anymore, it stops. It doesn't move on. So, and then we have the do. And this is everything inside the do is what the loop does on every iteration.
Right.
Okay. So those last two MySQL grabs that I'm doing are inside the do. So they're going to be done on every iteration of the script. And then the next one is we want to see the users whose processes are consuming the most memory. So I do PS-EO user RS. What the dash E does says show me every process. Okay? And then what the O flag does is it lets you specify the columns you want. I only want the user column and RSS, which is the memory it's using in kilobytes, as opposed to the virtual size memory, which includes a lot of shared memory in that size. I don't want to see the shared memory, because this total will give you a more picture of what the user's processes are actually going to consume.
I guess that's good to know info.
And then I use awk to sum them up, and then pretty print to maintain my column widths. See the printf, Mary? Pretty printing.
Excellent.
So, and then what I do also is I divide it by I. Because I want to get my answer in megabytes, because it automatically, by default, does it in kilobytes. So I divide it by 1024 and get the megabytes.
Very good.
All right.
And then sort NRK2, which means sort by it's going to be a number, and I want you to do it in reverse order, and column 2. I do it in reverse order because I want the big number at the top.
Okay.
So some people put the big number at the bottom because that's where sort puts it by default. But I want the big number at the top.
You're telling it to say, show me the top memory using processes, and then now sort by process.
No, this is users.
Users.
This is users.
Okay.
Like on a shared server, every account, so every website basically, sometimes multiple websites, have a specific username that has to run all their processes.
Right.
So these are the individual users on the machine who are consuming the most.
Okay.
Because they may not have an individual process that consumes a lot of resources, but their user as a whole is consuming a lot of resources.
Right. That makes sense.
Because then the next one after that gives me the top 50 memory-consuming processes. So yeah. We do that with PS-EO, and then user RS again, the same as before. But this time, instead of using the sort command outside, I'm going to use PS's built-in sort. You can use dash-dash sort, and then I want to sort the RS column in reverse order. So I add a dash RS, and it'll do it in reverse order. If you just did sort RS, it would do it in normal order.
Right.
But I want the big numbers at the top. And then I run it to head, dash N50, and then awk with my pretty printing to keep the columns all lined up. Because if the columns don't line up right, it's broken.
You know that last comment? I was ahead by one line. I was actually talking about this line. That I said. Anyway, continue on.
Okay. And then I also, if you'll notice, I'm using another printf there at the end, a printf new line. That's so that I separate every data collection with two blank lines. So that if I want to then scriptologically grab data out, I can say that my field separator
is a blank line.
Is two blank lines.
Or two blanks. Yeah, that makes sense.
There was that term again, Mary. Scriptographically.
I know. I think it's a interesting term. I've never heard of it.
The next we go with the users whose processes are consuming the most processor time. So we do the same thing, but it's basically the same script, except instead of RSS, I'm getting the PCPU, which is not... I wish there was a... I have to research it, because maybe there is a way to get it. But what this does is gives you a percentage of processor time, and it grabs that. So then we go. I go through and I add it all up again and sort it. And it's basically the same thing. And you'll notice that in this one, I'm using sed to insert headings. And in the very first one also, I was using sed to insert headings. But then in the next one, which is the top 50 processor and the top 50 memory, I don't need head to insert the headings. Because since I'm using sorts built in, PS's built in sort, it keeps the headings that it has. So, but the other two strip the headings out because the sort command. You should have eaten before you came. The sort command strips the headings out because it sorts it and they wind up down the line.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can go on in deeper detail if you like, man.
No.
Okay. And then next, I want to run top in batch mode. So what batch mode does is runs top one time, because we give it the dash N1 and then the dash B for batch. Because if you top can't really be grabbed and shoved into a file,
right? Unless you batch it.
Exactly. So I run it in batch mode, and then I can capture the data into a file.
All right.
And then the next thing we're going to do is going to be a bunch of stuff with VMstat.
Mm-hmm.
So what VMstat does is reports virtual memory statistics. So the first one we're going to do is as a VMstat-M, which, let me run it on my machine here. VMstat-M. My kernel doesn't support slab info. Okay. So, what it does is it gives you a slab info shot, which is just a whole lot of detailed information about what's using memory and where it's located. And I don't understand the vast majority of that output. There are better people than me that read this information.
All right.
So the next one is VMstat-D, and with -D, you'll notice that with the VMstat-M, we just did the -M, because that does a one-time report and then stops. But VMstat, a lot of the times VMstat does multiple reporting, so you have to set how often I want it to report and how many times I want it to report. So since this script is going to loop every 10 seconds, the VMstat is going to capture in 1 second intervals and 7 times. I just wanted to make sure it was done when the script was done.
Right, right. Okay. So,
and then we're going to also cut out a bunch of information that we didn't, that we don't want. Like, so that we use, I use sed-e to delete lines that have RAM and lines that have loop in them. And lines that have 1, 2, whatever. Oh, no, that's the first and second line.
Right.
To delete the first and second line, because I don't want those either. And then we use vmstat-d, which again is just a one-time thing that gives you a lot of extensive disk table information. It gives you information on the disk tables and what's going on with your disks. And then the lowercase s flag is the next one, and that gives us a bunch of event counters and memory stats, again, that are different than the slab info. So they could be useful if you know how to read it. I don't necessarily know how to read it. I'm just capturing this data for others.
Sure.
Tony's running them over here.
Is he?
Yeah, yeah, I'm throwing
each one in. So.
Cool. So then the next one up is going to be vmstat-a, and this displays active and inactive memory and what's going on with it. And this is, another one that is running, so we have to give it I tell it 1 second intervals and run 7 times. And now we're going to use iostat a couple of times. So the first iostat uses the switches dash C and T, and then 2 and 4, because again, iostat's going to collect, is going to iterate. So I want it to collect in 2 second intervals, and I want to do it 4 times. So that's what the 2 and the 4 do. And the dash C is exclusive of the dash D option, which means you can't use them together.
So,
and it displays only the CPU usage report. Like, if you do just iostat, you'll get 2 separate reports in 1 output. You'll get a CPU usage and the disks.
And Cheddar asks, sudo the vmstat, I think from a couple minutes ago. Question?
Do you sudo the vmstat?
No, I'm running this as root.
Okay.
Okay. He has all sorts of comments and additions for your script.
I'm open to all suggestions.
All right.
So, and again, I can't see what Chatter's saying.
I know, I'm kind of going back there and checking.
Yeah. Covered up, so.
I guess I'll manage the chat while you're doing this.
Okay, after that, we run iostat-dtm this time, and again with 2 and 4 for 2 seconds, 4 iterations, and this time the D option is exclusive of the C option and displays only device utilization report instead of the CPU.
All right.
So, and the M displays the statistics in megabytes per second instead of blocks. Because who the hell can read blocks per second? Nobody.
Okay.
And then I do SDA and SDB. The vast majority of our servers are running hardware RAID, so they only have an SDA. But it doesn't throw an error if you have an SDB in there. So I threw an SDB in there in case it's running on one of our older servers that actually has an SDA and an SDB.
All right.
And then we're going to use netstat a couple of times. So first we're going to use netstat-i, which displays a table of all of the network interfaces and basically their transmission errors, received errors, and transmission and received good. And then we're going to use netstat-s, which displays a summary of statistics for each protocol. So it says, you did this much UDP, you did this much blah, 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 blah. It's a huge list. And that's the end of our do, and then we tell it to sleep 10, which means wait 10 seconds before you go back to the top and do this again. It's very important to put sleeps in these kind of commands.
Mm-hmm.
I accidentally did not put a sleep in a command once because I overlooked it, and wound up bringing the server down.
Because it didn't.
Yeah, I did a while true and did not, and was just going to let it run and watch it run, but I forgot to sleep, so it just kind of.
Sure. Yeah.
Did bad things. And then I have the done at the end, which means that we're done.
Cool.
Yay. Oh, I'm clapping because of the wonderful job you did. Not that it's over. Yeah. No.
Anyway, I put this together for me, my personal use at work. So if you have any suggestions out there, I would greatly appreciate them.
I think this is helpful just to get an idea of how you could, you know, how making a script is not that difficult.
It's not.
You know, I mean, unless you're going to do something really complex.
Oh,
but I mean,
yeah, I mean.
But and then having a graphical user interface on top of this, I could see how you could design something, and then behind the scenes, you press this button, it's going to do this little script, or it's going to do this. I could see how, you know, you could put a little application together.
Sure.
All right, well, I was just thinking about that. It just seems kind of neat. All right, so, wow, what do we got next? Man, I tell you, I had to stand up.
That was
up.
A lot. Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, it's just, it took a little time to get through that, but it was very, very valuable. Hey, I got a question for you guys.
Yeah.
You know, typically...
I'm sorry. Chatter suggested using aux search instead of doing it the other way, and that's a good idea. Mm. I might take you up on that, Chatter.
If he's smart, Chatter, he will take it.
Well, I have to see how it works. I have to see if it'll exactly do what I want it to do, but I'm sure it will.
All right. If someone's going to recompile a kernel, because, you know, there's stuff, like, say, for example, the kernel...
My kernel not supporting the VNSAT slave infill there?
Yeah, something along those lines. You know, like the Kubuntu kernel I'm running, it's probably got all sorts of support for stuff in that I don't have. Is it really, you just go and grab the... Can you, do you have to grab some Kubuntu kernel source, or can you just go to kernel.org and get that source and then put it together there, and you can then drop it in and it'll work? Is that as easy as it is?
Well,
you have to give it the right flags.
Yeah, there's a lot of flags you have to go through and choose and
how do you
turn
find
on and turn
flags?
Off. It's in the make command.
Okay.
Or is it
I
make?
Remember that
there's
when I,
a
cause
make
I didn't...
configure. And in that configure...
There's like a list, right? And you've got to turn things on.
Yeah, and you go through and turn things on and off.
Oh, okay.
Now, if you were to choose, grab the Kubuntu source for the kernel, then you can go through and see what they've already turned on and off, and then just go in and make that one change that you want.
Oh, yeah.
It.
Okay.
Right.
And then...
Okay.
Right, because otherwise you have to go through everything and decide everything.
Then I'll get lost and then I'll get confused. So.
Well, you don't have to. I mean, you can just compile a vanilla kernel. Maybe it'll work.
Maybe.
Strawberry system, it might not. But I was thinking about that because I thought it'd be kind of fun to do, you know, as a project or something. So, all right, that was my question for you. I guess it's time to move on to...
It's listener feedback time.
And we have a listener feedback line, and that number is 313-626-9140.
We have Kevin Wisher emailed us, and he asked us to run a promo. Or actually, I think he ended up emailing me.
I was going to say, because I don't have that one.
We have a promo for their new Lugcast LinuxLugcast.com podcast. But that just came in. So let's go back to... When was there?
Okay.
You don't have any of your emails?
I have, Brad Alexander.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Hi guys, I'm back." I didn't know he was gone, but welcome back.
Oh.
Yep, and then we also had a couple I'm sorry, Matt, I'm talking over you. Go ahead.
That's okay. And Basil, thanks to a timely issue with his day job and a couple of Audible contracts that he had to finish on Thanksgiving. I have no idea what he's talking about there.
Basil is his friend that was writing that book that he asked us to do, the Indiegogo, so he has another one running.
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll plug that for him.
Yep.
And then he was also on Tilt's 542, So you can go back, listen to that Totes episode, and he talks all about it. I did listen to that episode, and he went into a lot of detail about just living in Alaska and talking about how he's writing the book, and it's really cool.
All right.
So yeah, 542 for Totes.
Okay.
But it's indiegogo.com/projects/icehammer, ice-hammer, which there'll be a link in the show notes.
All right.
Excellent.
And then we had one from Morten Yule Johansen Yulde Feyer. I think I got all of his name. But you remember we were talking about terminals, and he said, oh, and the Manjaro terminal used as Terminator under XFCE, it's XFCE4 terminal. I think that was from our last episode.
Yes.
So he weighed in with that, which was helpful, because I think I wasn't familiar with what they were. And
then we had, in that same thread, Scott came in, our friend in Montana, and he wanted the link to the TMUX book I mentioned, so I sent him.
Very good. So,
all right.
And then we had, I believe that Tom Duchesne weighed in, because we...
Yes.
When I was doing the review of Robo Linux, and I was talking about, I think, the file manager they use, he wrote back to thank us for the heads up on Sunflower File Manager. It's a gem. So he went on to say that a guy that he works with uses a Windows-based dual-pane file browser.
Yeah, it reminded me of Midnight Commander.
Uh-huh.
Midnight Commander is a dual-pane file browser also.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a command line.
Yeah.
Is that what
Well, hers is a graphical and
it's
right.
graphical, yeah.
My Midnight Commander is a command line.
And Crusader, which is the KDE one, it's a dual pane. I like dual panes because it's so easy.
It's a drag and drop.
Oh my gosh, yes. And not only
well,
that.
Well, Dolphin, I split it.
Yeah, I do too.
I split it very
by
often.
Default. And I think, don't you have the capability in Dolphin, if you're trying to move one to another, that if you just simply click it, or maybe it's Crusader that does this. It automatically presents you the path to this, so you don't have to. I think if you're doing something, you don't have to type in a path because it by default will give you this one. And if you need to change it, then you can go in and change it.
I don't understand what you're saying.
Okay. Well, basically, it's sort of like type ahead, but what it does for you when you're working in this dual pane environment. I'll have to go back and, I wasn't expecting to talk about this, right? I would have been more prepared. But what it does is it just simply takes the path.
Why aren't you dragging and dropping?
Not always. But for whatever this was, I'll go back and get the details on this. But what was nice about it is that you didn't have to type in a path because it had taken care of it for you. But it wasn't a drag and drop situation. I don't know what it was. I have no idea. I'll look it up.
All right.
But anyway, so we had that one, Tom, and then we had, do we have any others?
Yes.
We pretty much get them.
We had from 5150. He says, hey guys, I'm sending this note to Tilt and SMLR addresses because Tony expressed an interest in Ogcast Planet Live, and it's a plug for Ogcast Planet Live.
Yeah, basically, it's a get-together of a bunch of podcasters, and they're going to get together. And it's kind of like their idea is that it's the hallway track, but that's all it is. For the kernel, instead of having formal presentations and
you just walk by people having conversations in the hallway?
Pretty much. Everybody just gets together and talks, and he explains it more of
pretty
like an on-conference.
Pretty informal,
so,
okay.
Yeah, it's not, there's no formal presentations, but if you want to bring subject matter to talk about or to present on, then everybody can just randomly get together and talk about it.
Great.
And this year they're doing it at a amusement park as part of it, which is, it's inexpensive to get in, and then there's just space for everybody to get together. So that's interesting. And then they have other excursions. It's going to be, you know, a few days long, and they're going to just rent one big cabin that everybody can get together in and then go for a few days at this place. So it's interesting. I think it's Nobles,
K-N-O-E-B-L-E-S.
Yeah. So they're going to do it over the Memorial Day weekend, and I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to make it. But it's interesting. So.
Okay.
All right. I think that's it for feedback.
That's all I had.
Aside from the numerous new user registrations.
Right. Oh yeah. We got to talk about
Good
that.
Good call, Mary. I forgot about that.
I did a WordPress upgrade. To the latest version about 3 weeks ago. And ever since that, we've been getting like 20 a day of new users registering. The CAPTCHA isn't working right or something. So we went through and removed all of our subscribers because there were 600, almost 700 users.
98%. 99%.
And I'm thinking there's,
If you were subscribed to our website, please subscribe. And we're going to physically authorize the users this time.
Right, and Matt has volunteered to take on that that task. So if you subscribe to it and you don't hear him back in a couple of weeks, then email Matt directly at smlr.us, matt@smlr.us.
Yes. And I'll get it. And how I'm going to do that is I'm going to send you an email from the address you signed up with, and if I don't get an email back from you or reply, you're not getting in. So that's how I'm going to weed out the bots.
Maybe you could do a script.
Maybe.
All right.
Featured music of the week.
All right. So this week we have a suggestion that Mary brought up, and it's on Jamendo.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find a new one, or do you want to go with the one that you emailed me?
That's okay. Oh, yeah. Egypt Nights.
Yeah.
DJ Quincy Ortiz. And Egypt Nights. Yeah, I just thought we'd do something a little bit different because we've done the hardcore, grungy, indie, death metal stuff.
So it's by DJ Quincy Ortiz, and it's called Egypt Nights. All right, so you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Licks Review. This is episode 120.
Mardi Gras.
Mardi Gras.
Yeah, this is Tony Bemis.
Matt Enders.
And Mary Tomich.
Saying have a good week. See you in 2 weeks.
All right.
I still think that sounds weird.
See you in a couple of weeks.
Whatever.
So we're doing news? All right. Well, somebody's got news.
Who's got news?
I do.
All right.
You don't have any news, Matt?
I don't have any news.
I have two items, actually. And I guess we need to have an intro?
Oh, that's right. All right.
It's hey, soundboard man.
The tech news of the
week. Now you're right. Eddie's got to edit this out.
Well, we have an outtake.
That's right.
We have one outtake.
Okay.
Hi, folks. This is Chatter. Jay Wisher, Honky Magoo, 5150, and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduke to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
Linux Luddites is a show where we try out all the latest free and open source software and then decide we like the old stuff better.
More than just news and releases, we check out a wide range of Linux distros, cover your feedback, talk about obscure command line programs, discuss burning issues over a pint, and much, much more. So join me, Paddy,
and me, Joe, every 2 weeks for news, reviews, comment, and generally being grumpy at linuxluddites.com.
Linux Luddites, because not all change is progress.
Open source, Linux, computers, electronics, science, and amateur radio. We cover it all. Who are we? We are Linux in the Ham Shack, the podcast that brings you and your technology together with the power of software freedom. Drop us in your favorite podcatcher or join us every other Tuesday night interactive live show. Visit lhspodcast.info for all the details, news, and information. We are Linux in the Ham Shack, and we want to open your mind.